back every morning. We're on a brand new hour here on this Saturday's morning broadcast of the American Activist here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, and I'm your host, Don Harkins. Ordinarily, I am the editor of the Idaho Observer newspaper, and we are in our 11th year. We've just started our 11th year. Contrary, I've got to say, to the ad that runs for us that says we're in our 5th year, we're actually in our 11th year. And it gives us quite a perspective on what has happened to this country month by month by month when you review these things as they've developed since the Clinton age, the Clinton era, to present. It's really quite something else. And if you want to check out what we've been doing, where a lot of our work is archived online at idaho-observer.com. And also this last month, we dedicated page 2 to our last caller. The page 2 every month in the Idaho Observer is an American activist page. We just open the paper up every month with something that somebody is doing that's above and beyond the call of duty. And Roger Carter, our guest from the last hour, just completely fits that bill. And this hour, we have coming up, hopefully we're going to be joined by David Morgan. He's a silver investor, a man who has a personal friend of mine that lives not too far from us here. He lives north of Spokane, Washington. And he's been studying silver and working in silver for many, many years. He's dedicated much of his life to it. He's written a book on the subject, and he's got a really lucid way of taking a look at the commodities markets in general, silver in particular. And we're definitely at a really interesting era in world history. We have, because of the internet and just general communications technologies that have advanced to the point they have, we've got millions and millions and millions of people that have decided that they have the authority to make predictions. And so everything is being predicted, just like everything can be bet on. There's just every single day there's more people predicting stuff. And one thing that really identifies this age more than anything, probably, is that of all these people doing all this predicting, nobody seems to be right. There are so many variables that it's almost impossible to predict anything anymore. Just name it. There's just nothing that we can predict and have it come to pass. There are just so many variables, so many things happening, and everything is happening so quickly. And so what we should really begin doing then is maybe making predictions just as a hobby, but as we are attempting to tell people what's going on, we should just really begin outlining the issues that are extant, the conditions that exist, and then allow people the opportunity based on a solid foundation of information to go back through and understand more clearly what's going on so they can make informed decisions about what they're going to do next, because we do have some decisions to make and things are really beginning to cook in this country, and 2007 is promising to be an interesting year. And so when we come back, we're going to have with us David Morgan, a silver investor, a man whose information in this area I think is rather prodigious. And I think that he's going to be able to add a little bit of lucidity to your understanding of what the silver marketplace is all about these days. And it's going to be a wild ride in 2007. You can just bet on that. And everybody, we're on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And you know, you are a billboard for the truth, are you not? You wear clothes, do you not? If you're in North Idaho this morning, you'd probably better. And you can get the NoTyranny.com t-shirt from RBN, 1-800-724-2719. If you're walking, if you're breathing, if you're wearing clothes, be a billboard for the cause. This is Don Harkins on the American Activist, and we'll be back in just a few moments. back. It's a new hour and a completely new topic of discussion. I'm Don Harkins. I'm your host. This is the American Activist here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And it is true. We're in a really strange time where we can't really predict anything. In fact, you can drive down the street in any town in America today and you can see the price of gas, whatever it is. Let's see, now I think I just bought it last night for $1.96.9. But if you go across the street and up a block, it's $2.19. And then the next day, those prices can be flip-flopped. Or they can vary on one side of town to the other by 30 cents a gallon. And we didn't used to see that in America. That used to be a rather consistent price fixed issue, but that's just one indication of the uncertainty that we're faced with every time we go out and engage in commerce in here in the former land of the free. And I am always looking for something that will give me a little bit of a foundational understanding of what's going on so that we can, I guess, try in our own little lives, in our own minds, predict what's going to happen and adjust for that. And we have with us on the line this morning David Morgan. David has been involved in silver, the study of silver and the trading of silver for many, many years. I've found his analysis of silver and even other commodities to be rather lucid. And Dave, I guess the main reason I would like to have you on the program this morning is to just give us some background, give us a little bit of understanding maybe of what is happening and why and what we can be looking forward to over the next year. Not so much as predictions, because I don't want to hold you to that, because that'll put you in the same milieu as every other opinion with a you-know-what that is trying to make a prediction. But what kind of information can we give people so they can get a bit of a handle on what's going on with silver in particular coming up here in 2007?
All right, Don. Well, thanks for having me on the show, first of all, and thanks for everyone that's listening. And, of course, this show is for everybody that is in the listening audience, so we're going to take some questions later on as the show progresses. I think I want to start with a really big, big picture and then move into the silver market. But the big picture is, as you started on the previous show, is making predictions and that kind of thing. And, of course, it's always kind of fun to do that, but also, you're only as good as your last prediction. Of course, I do make forecasts in the market and, I've had some pretty good accuracy, specifically in the metals arena. But the biggest picture of all is what's going on in the global economic picture, and that one is the most important, and that silver and the gold markets are really a subset of that for certain reasons. But first of all, there has never been a fiat or a paper currency, a non-backed, unsound currency that hasn't failed. That's an economic fact. So if you take that and really digest that knowledge, then you have to start asking what I think is the most important question anyone can ask, and that is, since the reserve currency of the world is the U.S. dollar, and it became that after Bretton Woods agreement after World War II, after World War I, we see that that held until August 15th, 1971, when Nixon closed the gold window. The reason that the dollar was the reserve currency of the world was that the dollar is as good as gold. That was an expression that people in my age group or older always used to hear, is good, dollars as good as gold or sound as a dollar, meaning that the reserve currency was the dollar, but the dollar itself was as good as gold. And that was true for quite some time after World War One up until 1971. At that time, the reserve currency of the world was allowed to float against other currencies, and Nixon stated that it was only as viable as productive capacity of the United States, which sounds, very encompassing and pretty strong, but in reality, there is no policeman on the currency any longer. There's no gold backing, and the currency can be printed willy-nilly in order to cover what's known as deficit spending. So there's never been in history an unbacked currency that hasn't had a problem later on down the road. As a quick example, all currencies, several currencies in Latin America have had hyperinflationary repercussions, and this is because these countries have tried to print their way out of problems. You cannot print wealth. Wealth cannot be printed. Wealth has to be produced. And the productive capacity of America's potential is probably as great as ever. Unfortunately, the reality is productive capacity of America is in almost the idle mode right now, meaning that very little products are produced here. Almost everything is produced under cheaper labor in foreign nations. And that's even true of almost most of corporate America, where the products that are imported from China may be coming from an American corporation or one that's incorporated in America, but yet the actual production itself takes place overseas. So we've lost a great deal of our economic strength. We're trying basically to print our way out of it. The problem, the way I see it, is at this time, instead of being a nation state where you have an isolated problem, and admittedly America is not that big on a population basis, but it's huge on a financial basis, and because everything is tied to the U.S. dollar, then if there is a problem with the U.S. dollar, then basically what that implies is there's a problem on a worldwide basis. And that is what I see. That's the big picture. So the question for the listeners and most of the presentations that I do is that, one, if all currencies that were unbacked have had problems in the past, you have to ask why it won't happen this time, why the dollar is different. And I've gotten some very interesting answers. I've got, well, we have computers now, or we're smarter now, or we've learned more now, or they're better at, they, meaning the Federal Reserve, the banking powers that be, are able to control it, and they know what the repercussions are, and because of all these situations that, you know, it won't happen. I disagree. I think that the facts remain as they always have, and because of that we should be taking that to heart and preparing so. Having said that, I don't think you have to go overboard. I don't think you have to sit here and dwell on the topic. I don't think you have to, you know, obsess about it. I don't think that you have to, worry about it on a daily basis. I think there's some very simple actions that the average person can take that are pretty solid, pretty common sense. You can take those, make those preparations, and go on about your daily life. Certainly, the possibility that it won't happen exists. But I believe we're getting closer on a daily basis. But certainly there's no reason to, you know, fret and worry over it constantly. You just basically got to take in the information, absorb it, digest it, and do what you think is the most prudent action. Take that action, and from that point forward, you can basically, just go, as I said, go about your normal life.
Well, that is a really interesting distinction that you just made. That is that good as gold, you know, the dollar being rooted and bound to gold in our mind, as well as is backed physically. And then when Nixon came around, that era came around when we went off the gold standard, and so going from good as gold to as good as American productivity. And it seems like a minor leap and maybe just a little bit of languaging, but it's actually an indication of a huge philosophical shift, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I just returned from the Vancouver Gold Show, and one of my friends there said, you know, we should do a survey, and we didn't do this, and just ask, you know, every person that we, you know, could find, is the dollar, you know, what backs the dollar? And he says, I'll bet you that 80% of people say, well, the gold backs the dollar, because there's still this subtle belief, people that really don't know monetary history or understand what's going on, that, you know, there's gold in Fort Knox, supposedly, and that gold in Fort Knox backs the dollar. And so, you know, you're basically on a sound basis. Of course, that's, you know, I don't know if there's gold in Fort Knox or not, but what I do know is the dollar certainly is not backed by gold.
Right.
A lot of people don't know that. And so that, you know, in itself, I mean, in order to get a clear take on what you should do to prepare for the future, you first of all have to understand the problem. And if you don't know there is a problem or understand why the problem exists, certainly you don't know what the proper preparations are. And unfortunately, in my view, and, you know, this could be borne out, there are very few that really understand what's going on. And because of that, there are a lot of people that will not be prepared as this thing unwinds.
Well, you know, that's a mantra that I've kind of established over time here. And it was a guy named Greg Pappas brought it up to me, and it's made so much sense. Everybody should master three areas of their life. They should, one, They should know how their body works, how it gets sick, and how to make it well again. You should just know that. You don't need a doctor. You just know how your body works, how to make it well again. Then you should understand who you are in the eyes of the state and the eyes of your creator, two completely different things. You should have mastery of both of those. You should know how the state views you. You should know how you are in the eyes of God or your creator. And the third thing that everybody should master is their understanding of the money system. Those three things are critical to having a successful, healthy, and happy life, and also critical to your being able to get through life without being duped day after day after day on issues that are vital to your health and well-being.
Well,
we're hitting the money aspect of that here this morning. And everybody, we're going to be taking calls at the bottom of the hour. We're going to be taking a break here shortly, and we'll have another segment. We're going to kind of narrow the issue down a little bit in the next segment. And then when we come back at the bottom of the hour, go ahead and give us a call at 1-800-313-9443. And if you've got comments or questions for Dave, I'd love to take them, and so would Dave. So hang tight. This is the Republic Broadcasting Network. You're on the American Activist, and we'll be back in just a few moments. Welcome back, everybody. I'm your host, Don Harkins, on the American Activist, and our guest for the second hour is David Morgan, the Silver Investor. If you would like to see what's up with Dave, he's got a website. It's silver-investor.com. He also has the Silver Investor newsletter, which you can subscribe to. And if you want to check out the full range of what he has to offer as far as silver metals, investing and the history of the marketplace itself, go ahead and go to silver-investor.com. And Dave, one of the things that we're all hearing in the news, and it's something that you touched on with the U.S. dollar being the world's reserve currency, is huge in the news these days, is how various nations of the world that have been monetizing their various commodities assets, particularly oil, in U.S. dollars, are fleeing the sinking U.S. dollar ship as fast as they can go. So this strength in the dollar, which went from being as good as gold to being as good as American productivity, which of course is out the window now, is been its capacity as a reserve currency, and that is changing dramatically too, completely weakening the position of the fiat currency. Is that correct?
Well, I would alter what you said slightly, but your premise is exactly correct.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that everyone is fleeing the dollar. I'd say that they're fleeing it, but not rapidly. Everyone knows, meaning the banking system as a whole, total in the world, depending on what nation state you are, they're basically all in the same banking system. And basically they all know that they can't jump ship too fast or the ship will sink. And knowing that, you're correct, Don, that everybody basically wants out of the dollar. They want less dollar exposure. But the problem becomes if you start fleeing too quickly, then the person or the nation state jumping off the dollar bandwagon spooks the next nation state and says, oh my goodness, I'm getting off this thing before it sinks too. And then you get kind of this domino effect. So the only, point of that I would bring up is, how fast are they moving from the dollar? And no one knows for certainty, but I would say as quick as they can without being detected. The problem is that you can have what's called systemic risk. And what that means is what I was outlining. You could have, let's say, for example, China, who's been very vocal that they have $1 trillion, but you know, surplus from the trade imbalances, and they want to diversify out of the dollar. And they've made that announcement very public. In fact, we've had Bernanke and company go over to China. We also have had the new Secretary of the Treasury over there like 70 times in the last couple of years. I mean, these guys aren't going over there to dine with each other. So as this progresses, you will probably see, in my view, of someone that wants to accelerate their exposure out of the dollar, and that could cause a ripple effect. Is that a possibility? Certainly it is. I just did a video that's on YouTube a while back. It's a very dramatic outline of kind of the worst case scenario, but basically it's what we're talking about. It's where somebody, some nation state, a big investor, et cetera, decides, you know what, I really don't want dollars. I'd rather have gold. I'd rather have silver. I'd rather own it in the oil contracts or whatever. And they move a relatively significant amount of money out of the U.S. dollar and into some other commodity or some other investment class, and that causes a large problem. So certainly I'm not arguing with you, Don. I'm actually agreeing your premise is 100% correct. I'm just saying that these nations, these bankers know that there's a problem, but they also know that if they make too big a move, it could spook the market. So it's going to be very, as your favorite word of mine, interesting going forward. And how it unravels, no one knows for certainty, but I do have history on my side, and I know that, as I said earlier, there's certain measures that an individual can take that will certainly help them weather whatever, you know, the ship faces.
Yeah, and it's true that I do use that term interesting a lot, because I'm fascinated with just about everything in life. I find very few issues to be boring to me. I just, when you get into the meat of anything, you find a rich pageantry and history of details that allow for an intellectual mind to just expand on. And so, indeed, we are at a real interesting time in our financial history in this country, because we're upside down, and we're seeing that a lot of people, and you're right, I think my comment that they're leaving in droves, that's possibly a little bit sensationalistic, but it's certainly a trend that is beginning now that hadn't been there since the world currency being established as the dollar in the post-World War II era. So we're going on 40, 50 years of this dollar supremacy worldwide that is changing at this time, and we can certainly expect repercussions from that to get into all the subtle little places that financial issues have a tendency to pop up. And so hang tight, Dave. We'll go ahead and we'll take callers, 1-800-313-9443 when we come back after the bottom of the hour break. This is Don Harkins on the Republic Broadcast Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. Broadcasting Network, and you're listening to The American Activist, a weekly radio program that comes to you 2 hours every Saturday morning, and we do like to emphasize activism, and the reason being that there are a lot of things going on in this country today, and a lot of things that people of character really need to be standing up for and being counted, and when we find that ordinary folks, you, me, our neighbors, friends, family, are actually out there utilizing their intelligence resources and their financial resources altruistically in an effort to make our world a better place, maybe to realize a benefit in their lifetime, maybe not. It's very encouraging, it's uplifting, and it really inspires people to get on board. And so the Idaho Observer newspaper is, as the ad said, it's a networking mechanism. Get a hold of the Idaho Observer, and there are so many different causes that people are fighting, and you, if you're so inclined to do so, can join in. And it's a marvelous way to tell your grandkids that you did something, and instead of just laying down for whatever it is that's coming. In fact, Dave, what is coming? Just as best as you can guess, why don't you give us a little bit of a background of the last several months of what's gone on with, say, silver, because that's your particular area of interest and expertise. And then what do you think is going to be happening to silver over the next several months, and what can we look forward to, I guess, just economically on the big scale over the course of the next several months? Hey, Dave, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Oh, there you go. Were you just trying to digest that rather loaded question I asked?
I don't know. It was a three-parter, so I got to get my memory hooked up.
Okay, let's just go back. What has been going on with silver over the last several months that is unique to what has been happening with silver over the last several years previous?
Okay, well, I'll give a recent history, and recent for me would mean basically from the 1980 top, where we peaked at about over $50 an ounce intraday on the trading floor. And I think one, to start there, is a good place, because although that was the price and the open outcry system on the COMEX, the actual price you could get for silver on that day varied quite a bit throughout the country. Now, I happen to be in the Los Angeles area at the time, and all the main dealers in Los Angeles had bid back, meaning, you know, there's an offer, there's a buy and a sell on everything. I mean, in a stock, in a commodity, everything. And usually the difference between the two is called the spread. And the spread's usually fairly tight. Like for a stock, for example, you might have to pay a small percentage more to get the stock, and when you sell it, you might pay a little percentage less to sell the stock. But anyway, the point being that silver had moved so rapidly and up so quickly that the dealers were scared of any kind of fallback in price. So on the day that silver was trading into the $50 range, the dealers were actually paying $35 per ounce. So if you had a bag of silver and you were lucky enough to pick the exact day to sell it, and you walked into the dealer, you would have gotten $35 per ounce instead of $50. Now, that was in Los Angeles. Now, that wasn't necessarily true throughout the country. There were places in Minnesota, or rather, one of the largest coin dealers that I happen to know personally, that was paying, I don't remember exactly, but it was substantially more. I think they were paying around the $45 level, but I don't know the exact number. So that's something to be aware of. And, of course, people are a little upset by that fact, but, you know, you got to look at it from the dealer's point of view. They were getting pretty scared. Everybody was really skittish around the market. That's what happens at these big peaks. And this is, in my point of view, kind of a warm-up or a prelude to what's going to happen in the future. There is a way to sell your silver, I think the best way, and that is to, if you have a futures account, is to sell it on paper and hold the metal. In other words, you could have gotten the $50 an ounce if you had a futures account, sold it in the futures market, and then when the price came down, you could still own your silver and you'd be protected on the downside. But that's probably a discussion for later on. So basically what we had from the 1980 peak for the next 22 years is a bear market in silver. And it just kept coming down and down and down, and then it flattened out around the $5 level. 93, it hit 350. Didn't stay there very long, but it stayed around the $5 level year after year after year with very little movement. And then Warren Buffett made a purchase, and he announced that in 1998, and the market spiked up to about 750, and there it very quickly came back down around the $5 level again. We really didn't get moving in the silver market until about 2003, and I actually called pretty much the bottom of the market recent times, saying that, you know, about this time is when we should start seeing strength in the silver market we have. Over the last few years, silver's done quite well on a real basis. You know, just for everyone's edification, it is important to remember that when I say $50 an ounce in 1980, that's a different $50 than a $50 bill in 2007, because during that interim period, we have had a massive amount of paper money increases, or the money supplies increase dramatically, and that means that that $50 had much more purchasing power in 1980 than it has in 2007. In fact, if we inflation adjust the $50 spike in today's terms, we'd be looking at $125 an ounce silver.
Wow, well, that's a pretty sobering little insight, I think.
Indeed. Excuse me.
And actually, why don't you hang on to that thought, Dave? We've got callers lining up for you. And so let's go ahead and take a couple of calls. And everybody, please try to be really concise and keep your comments germane to our discussion this morning. And we'll start with David in Maryland. David, you're on the line.
Question about the largest silver deposit in North America, Revit Minerals and Mines Management. Why don't these companies merge? If they did, they could double their valuations and have the cost of capital, saving billions of dollars in revenues from giving away to outsiders.
Okay, I heard the question, and just going to repeat it. Why doesn't Revet Minerals and Mines Management combine forces? And I normally don't talk stocks in my program, but I will in this case. I can pick and choose. First of all, I know both of the mines very well. And if those mines were combined, I believe it'd be the largest copper deposit on the planet. The reason that I don't think it'll happen is that there's some issues with one of those mines that are unresolved at this time. Legal issues because of their take to come out in the Canadian market, and those haven't been resolved to my knowledge. I may be wrong. I don't study both of them that closely anymore. Also, the mining methods used. And there is a big ravine between the two, not that it isn't, closely located as far as mines are concerned, but there's all kinds of issues. There's political issues, there's personalities involved, and there's lots of things. I was hoping a similar situation, that could take place, but after looking at it very closely for quite some time, although it's been a while since I did, I don't see that happening. So certainly, in theory, it makes a lot of sense, but as a practical situation, I doubt it will take place.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call, David. Okay, thank you very much. And Richard from Alabama, you're on the line. What can we do for you this morning?
I have this theory about why the dollar is holding up as well as it is and why foreign governments are not redeeming their treasury bills and notes and bonds.
Okay. Make it, if you can, keep it brief, please.
The government has signed protocols with foreign governments that allow foreign governments to redeem their dollar holdings with American land to form private-public partnerships exercising eminent domain and to take American land. And I think that all of the property tax assessment sheets have been removed from the courthouse, and they have been transferred to the authority of foreign governments, and that will be their authority to claim eminent domain over our property. And I think that's why they hold on to the dollars.
That's another thing that's been in the news quite a bit lately, is various assets in this country, roads and bridges and utilities, are being bought up by foreign interests.
Yeah.
And so you're thinking that the lack of or sinking confidence in the U.S. dollar is being bolstered by it being backed up by assets on American soil?
Yes, eminent domain. They've been promised eminent domain.
What do you think about that, Dave?
No comment. I plead ignorance on that one.
Okay. It's a pretty interesting thought. So thanks a lot for the insight, Richard. And I do see in the news some verification that process is going on. So it's certainly something to keep in mind. So thanks a lot for calling. Okay, and we have Tom from Michigan. You're on the line, Tom. What can we do for you this morning?
Hi, Dave. I've been a fan of yours for a couple of years. Would like to comment on the Silver Exchange Traded Fund. I've been watching it carefully since last August. In the last 2 weeks, it has lost 6 million ounces of silver. I'd like you to comment as to the possible reason why.
Well, if you read the prospectus, I mean, you're allowed to deal once you have a basket of silver, and then the exchange allows you to trade, and in the prospectus, you're allowed to move silver in and out. You know, why it's being moved out is the question I'd like answered as well. I mean, I'd just be speculating, but, you know, there may be someone there that needed it or, definitely wanted it. The problem with the ETF, in my view, first of all, I think overall it's a positive thing. I really believe that. The problem, as I see it, is it's cash settled only. So it really doesn't matter in some, in a sense that, how much silver's in it. Of course, it does make a difference. The point is that you can't get the silver out as an investor. You can only get the cash equivalent. So that's a little bit of a drawback. But I think this thing is going to actually be beneficial to the silver market. My main concern is it real physical silver or is it not? And I'm addressing that in this month's Morgan report. The new prospectus has been altered slightly, and you got to read these things like a lawyer because lawyers write them. And they've changed the word silver bullion to silver in the prospectus. I'm looking for the audited 10-Q, which we have not seen yet. And once the auditors are in there, we should know, hopefully, whether or not all the silver is physical silver or if they're allowing silver in quotation marks to be, for example, paid for warehouse receipts where you could do, double entry bookkeeping. You could have some COMEX silver, have the receipt and use that as fulfillment of the contract to get a basket. I don't want to get too complex here. It's really not. But hopefully the auditors will uncover that. The problem with an audit is that you don't know how deep they really go. I mean, if the auditor goes in, they open the doors of the vault, they look in there and they say, well, there's the silver. See it? There's really no way to go in unless you do a really thorough audit, number by number, bar by bar, and say, well, all that silver belongs in the ETF. Just because it's in that vault, maybe, those bars are owned multiple times on paper. So, I'm a bit skeptical of it, but as I said, and I'll repeat the last time, I think overall it's very beneficial for the silver market. At least it gets the idea of investing silver out there into the public's mind and into the money-managed markets like fund managers and money managers and financial planners. So overall, I'm positive on it, but as far as the details are concerned, I'm reserving judgment until I see an audited statement.
I'm looking forward to your newsletter. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tom. Okay. We're going through these really well. Good job, guys. I really appreciate the lucidity of the questions and their germane nature to our discussion this morning. And now we have Bob from Washington. Bob, are you on the line?
Greetings, guys.
Hey, good morning.
Greetings from balmy Western Washington. most of us, we own both physical and equity. In order to get the leverage, we own the equities. But at the recent Vancouver Gold Show, three of the speakers said, sell all your stocks now and go to physical metal, real estate, and dollars. And the question is, if there's any validity to comments like that, how can one protect themselves in the equities so that they aren't caught suddenly by a huge downdraft or a sell-off of the marketplace?
Okay, well, that's a very good question, and I know who you're referring to. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to hear many of the speakers myself. I was very busy, as usual. How do you protect yourself if you have exposure? And I'm just going to make the assumption that you were talking about, primarily natural resource stocks.
Yes.
Okay. The larger companies have puts and calls on them. So one way to do it is with buying puts. And even if you don't have Silver Standard or Pan American or Silver Wheaton, for example, you can still use that as a proxy to protect your portfolio. For an example, if you had a basket of juniors and a fairly significant amount of money in there, or even not, I mean, whatever your exposure is, you could hedge that by buying puts in the marketplace. That's one way to do it. Mm-hmm. I want to comment on what you said about, these three speakers have basically said, sell your stocks and go to metal only. I believe that to be a correct methodology, but later in the market. Ian McAvity is the one that should be given credit for this because he's done the most work in this area. But at the top of the bull markets in the metals, you're actually better off owning the metals itself rather than the underlying equities that mine the metal. But I don't see that phase of the market yet. I see that as phase three, and we are just really gutting through phase two right now, where the public, most of the public, is waking up to, one, that there's something wrong in the financial system, and two, what can I do about it? And also, from the managed money point of view, again, they're waking up to this as well. So I don't think it's important at this time to do that. Obviously, all of these stocks move very quickly up and down. It's not a bad idea all the way through to probably protect your position with puts. That's probably the easiest and simplest way to understand it. There are other methods, but it gets rather complicated. I think it's outside the this discussion.
Well, as a follow-up, Dave.
Hang tight, Bob. Actually, I don't mean to cut you off, but you can get a hold of Dave at silver-investor.com. We're coming up to a break, and I don't think we'll probably get all the way through that before you are able to ask your question. So hang tight. Go ahead and look up Dave online, and or maybe call him at home, Dave, if you want to give your, or at your office, give your number out, and we can do that in a moment. But when we come back, we'll have a really short segment. We'll do a wrap-up, and also we have Brian from Alaska on the line. So hang tight, Brian. We'll get to your question after these messages. This is Don Harkins and the American Activist. You're on the Republican Broadcast Network, and support our advertisers. We'll be right back. American Activist here this Saturday morning, and we have one more caller to get to before we close out the show. We got Brian from Alaska. Hey, Brian, you still there?
I am still here.
All right, man. Thanks a lot for your patience. What can we do for you this morning?
No problem. Thank you. Well, this question might be out of left field, but I'm going to ask it anyways. You know, I've been packing away Krugerrands and 100-ounce silvers and stuff, but my question is, in the real-life financial world, let's say I need to go down to get a dozen eggs and a gallon of milk. At some point in time, the dollar's going to be wherever it's going to be. We're going to go to something else. How is this silver and gold going to go down to the local grocery store and get me a dozen eggs and a gallon of milk?
Excellent question. That is real practical. What do you have to say to that, Dave?
Well, I have to say that I believe it'll work. What I teach is that that everyone really should start with what's called a junk bag in the trade, meaning that you have $1,000 face value of dimes or quarters or even 50-cent pieces. And the reason for that is what you outlined. For in a practical sense, if you had to rely on payment of real money, what would you use? You'd use a small unit, and therefore, you know, you don't want just 100-ounce bars of silver. You want, you know, small units, which would be like a dime or a quarter. I know from my own experience that in the first oil embargo in the mid-70s, that there were a couple of gas stations in Los Angeles that actually had a special line for people that would pay in silver quarters, silver dimes, that kind of thing, and actually got preferential treatment while other people were in line, waiting to pay in Federal Reserve notes. Normally in a crisis, it's amazingly how quickly people come up to speed, especially with a junk bag, for example. I mean, the quarters look very similar to what they look like today, but it's very easy to detect that they're real silver, 90% silver, rather than what I call the Johnson slugs. So I believe that it would take place. Would everybody come up to speed? No. But people that, you know, are quick to react to the circumstances would. So I believe that it would probably be your best alternative. Of course, one of the big arguments is, well, you can't eat gold, you can't eat silver. And I live just north of Palouse, which is a large wheat-growing area in Washington State. And, you know, a farmer that has several acres of wheat out there, he's got a wheat problem. I mean, if circumstances get to the point where you're outlining, what is he going to do? I mean, he can't eat all that wheat, so he's going to want to barter that wheat for something else. The chances are he would much rather barter that wheat for gold or silver coins than he would for another automobile, another TV set, or another computer. So I still believe strongly that in the worst case circumstances, that probably, you know, small units, gold and silver would serve you the best. It's yet to be tested. It has worked in the past. I believe it would work in the future.
I think that's an excellent point to close out the show. We're running into the bottom of the hour. Thanks a lot, Brian. I mean, you brought up a really practical point. Yeah, you can't eat gold or silver, but if the dollar fails and we don't have a lot of paper dollars that are going to be buying anything anymore, we can have a tangible commodity metal at our disposal. Excellent, excellent insight. David, thank you so much for being on the show. Again, everybody, silver-investor.com if you want to check out David Morgan and his full range of consulting and investment services and his newsletter. I suggest that you do that. silver-investor.com. David, thanks so much for being here, and thanks for closing out the show with that excellent, excellent little insight. Junk bags of silver could be your savior of the future when the dollar collapses. And everybody, speak to people's listening, write to their reading, and get out there and make a difference in our world today.